Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols. Today, I am joined by NBA champ, co-host of All the Smoke, Mr. Matt Barnes. Thank you for being here today. And the legend, the Hall of Famer. Oh, yes.
Got to stop that.
Michael Wilbon. We just refer to him as Hall of Famer now wherever
we go. No, we're not doing that.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Rich.
No, we refer him to No Pants Mike.
Oh.
That man's out here, got his legs lotioned up. He looks good, though, everybody. This is Phoenix.
Days ago, weeks ago, I said, okay, Rach, will you tell me when you want me to join you? Mm-hmm. A couple weeks ago. So here I am.
Yeah.
Right? And you don't give me any warning that Matt is going to come on looking like he's going to a GQ shoot later today. Come on now.
You should expect this from him.
It's in PTI. We have a desk. You guys, what? You cutting expenses? Right. I can't get in these.
I think your shorts are lovely.
Yeah, sure you do.
And it will be a joy to talk about them and your Hall of Fame status for the rest of this show. We are also going to have Dave McMenamin join us. Robert Horry is going to be checking in from our LA studio. First, though, we got to talk about game one of the NBA Finals. The Phoenix Suns getting a here for the first time since 1993. They led by a combined 81 points from their big three of Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton. Teams that win game one of the finals, guys, go on to win 72% of the time. So, Mr. Wilbon, what impressed you most about the Phoenix Suns in game one?
You have to start with Chris Paul and just sort of setting the tone. You know, I mean, he and Monty Williams, of course. And this is not new because they've been doing this the entire season. Focus. They don't take plays. I mean, Chris doesn't want them to take plays off it. He's gotten that over to the younger players like DeAndre Ayton. Here's what we do. Here's how we do it. We do it this way all the time. No excuses. Mm-hmm. And they played that way.
Yes.
They played the way they played in all but two games in the playoffs. And then Chris's performance. I mean, just taking advantage of Milwaukee's. Again, you know, I can't trust Milwaukee because I don't even know what they're doing half the time, and particularly defensively. You can't have those forwards. You have to have guards. If you're gonna switch, you have to figure out how to keep those guys out of Chris Paul's way. Because he's going to torch them. I watched a game last night with Isaiah Thomas and with Avery Johnson. And it was so funny, Matt, because they're just explaining what is going to happen
every single possession.
That's amazing.
Because they know how they were when confronted with Brooke Lopez, with Tucker, with Bobby Portis. You're not stopping Chris Paul. So all of that, I guess, goes into my mix on what just impressed me last night.
Yeah, overall, Chris, very impressive. His first after 16 years finally getting here. But really what surprised me the most is just the poise and the patience that the younger players play with. You can never tell that this young Phoenix team has never been here. They've acted like this is, hey, we're returning here like the Golden State Warriors or something like that. So really impressed with the young players, the way they came out and played. Ayton, 22-19. Book picked his spots. And as Mike said, you know, after Chris's first quarter feeling out the flow of the game, he really started picking and choosing his spots and was just tearing the defense up, but also getting other players involved as well.
Well, look, we all know how smart Chris Paul is, right? So especially with the defensive switching that the Bucks were doing. And they worked on this all year, right? We saw them all season learn to switch right in front of us on the fly because it was what they were criticized for not doing the previous year. But Chris is so smart. He just picked everything apart, especially in the third quarter. So his 32 points, 16 came in that third quarter. And that's really what put the Phoenix Suns on that rocket ship to this win. You played with Chris, obviously. Yes. What is he like on the floor in those moments that he is able to be as surgical as we saw him last night?
Just he's seeing plays before they happen. And as Mike spoke with Isaiah and Avery, great point guards see the play before it happens. They know. So no matter where you're going to hide a Brooke Lopez or a Bobby Portis or even a P.J. Tucker on the switch, Chris is going to find them. And what I loved about it was obviously he was in his ISOs. No matter if they switched or they dropped, Chris was able to get to a spot and either put pressure by throwing lobs, finding kicking out for threes, or getting to a spot and knocking down that mid-range. And then Devin Booker followed suit. He was coming downhill off the pick and roll all night, getting to a spot and pulling up, fading away a little bit and knocking shots down.
Well, do you want to talk about the other side? Because it wasn't all bad for the Bucks last night. They got Giannis Antetokounmpo back, returning from that hyperextended knee. He scored 20 points. He grabbed 17 rebounds, 35 minutes of action, had that amazing block, right? And after the game, he was asked if his knee bothered him throughout the night. Take a listen to how he described it.
At the end of the day, I'm out there. I feel good. I don't feel pain. You know, I can run. I can jump. I can set screens. You know, I can rebound the ball. I can do stuff. So I'm good. I'm happy. I'm happy that I'm out there. You know, at the end of the day, I haven't watched the clip, but when the play happened, I thought I'm going to be out for a year, you know. So I'm just happy that two games later, I'm back.
That's so just striking when he says that. You can imagine him feeling like that in that moment. Well, Bon, we had Chris Bosh on the show last week, and he said he had the exact same injury. And his estimation from his own experience was that he didn't expect Giannis to be back for the entire playoffs. How would you grade his return last night?
A plus. I'm grading the whole thing, the whole situation. I mean, he could have been out.
Right.
And instead, he plays 35 minutes. I mean, I realize he wasn't Giannis at his best. But the fact that he was out there and he gave them this, first of all, the Bucks have to feel so much better going into game two, having seen this from Giannis, this level of production. And obviously, like late in the game, it seems like he was a little gassed, and you don't know if there was soreness. Like I said, no pain. Could have been soreness. But man, for Giannis to be out there, I thought when they upgraded him from doubtful to questionable yesterday, I thought he's playing.
Yeah.
Right? And, and they're not going to talk him out of it. And I said, I would like to see him wait. Wait till Sunday, get five extra days. But in talking to, again, former players, former great players, and Matt probably feels this way too, you want to play now. You don't know when this is coming back. Four games is such a brief time, too, you know, minimum four, that I've totally changed on this. Giannis knew what he was doing. Other people either got out of the way or he forced them out of the way in terms of the decision making. And this is why we have people who have played and played in the biggest stages to listen to.
Right.
Because you knew how important that was to Giannis, didn't you, going in?
When I saw the injury initially, I thought he was done for the rest of the playoffs. I mean, that was a real hyperextension. And normally, timetable on that is anywhere 3, 6, 8 weeks. For him to turn around and only miss two games, first of all, for him to come back, hats off. He's an emotional leader, and he leads by how hard he plays. Most of the time with players, and I saw this with Giannis, he was a little hesitant. I saw a little limp early in the first half, but I think that chase down block at the end of the first half proved to him that my knee is okay, because a lot of times when we coming back from knee injuries, I had one knee injury, the hardest thing to do once we're medically cleared is really trust it, especially him. He's someone who's Euro stepping from half court, dunking on people consistently, and that's the knee he's going to have to really plan on. So when he was able to hit that chase down block, I think we saw a little bit more of the old Giannis in the second half. He's putting more pressure on the defense, attacking the basket, knocking his free throws down. So I'm very encouraged about Milwaukee, because he's only going to get better from here.
And look, there are different skills that different players have, right? And one skill is durability. There are guys who just are physically able to withstand more. They call him the Greek freak for a reason.
Right.
He is a freak of nature physically in a lot of ways, right? His size, his body type, and apparently now we've seen this with LeBron through the years too, the ability to sustain an injury and withstand it and come back a little bit quicker than others would or that we expect. The only worry I have, despite how encouraging what he did last night was, and especially as you're right, Matt, that chase down block said, oh, he's got movement too. That's good. We saw with Kevin Durant him come back from an injury because of all of that pressure that you are talking about, Mike, right? Wanting to be there for your team, knowing how rare finals appearances can be. And when one side of the body is weakened, it opens you up to other significant injuries. Do you worry about that at all with Giannis? Or do you feel like what you saw last night, he's out of the woods?
Well, I don't know if you're ever out of the woods, but Matt said something to me that is so important about the way Giannis plays. With the Euro stepping all the time and you're coming down and putting all that pressure on
one leg.
You know, and you see that, you're looking at it, and a couple of times last night I just sort of
cringed.
Yes.
Yes.
And I hope that he is through the woods. I hope that he doesn't have to worry about this anymore. Because you want to see, look, the injuries have defined the playoffs all too much anyway.
Mm-hmm.
These playoffs.
Yep.
So if you can see Giannis at as close to full strength as he can be, I think that's great for the game. It's great for people watching it, for the product, for him, for the franchise, and for all involved.
I think him in particular, because they've had some shortcomings. Obviously, two-time MVP, number one seed, fell short. They're finally here, and then he incurs a bad injury. You know, so the fact that he's out there, obviously he's not 100%, but the fact that he's going to go down fighting whether they win or lose with Giannis is important to him and important to the rest of the league and for former players, because like I said, you don't ever know when your next finals opportunity is going to come around. This is Chris's first opportunity after 16 years, so you got to cherish these moments.
And look, he's been open about the fact that he heard all of that criticism, especially after he won his second MVP, to be a back-to-back MVP, but get bounced early in the playoffs and have the guy that some other people thought should be an MVP end up winning the finals. Giannis came out and said, I don't think that this really counts until I win a title. And he earned a lot of players' respect by doing that. And you can see he wants to pay that off. All right, coming up, we've got so much more to talk about today. We're going to check in with Dave McMenamin. He is covering the Suns for these finals. What is the mindset of that locker room after winning game one? We'll discuss. All right, Matt Barnes, we need a little Phoenix Suns history from your time playing here. And your twins were even born here, right?
Yeah, twins were, this where twins kind of got their first air, first professional games were in Phoenix. Loved the experience. Unfortunately, that was a season that Amari almost lost his eye. He got his eye poked in the preseason. Terry Porter was our coach, fired at All-Star break. Al Gentry came in. 46-36, I think they said. We barely missed the playoffs, but great time, great fan base, and very happy just for this fan base, because I was asking the driver on the way over here, I was like, I know this town's on fire. He's like, people were in the streets yesterday going crazy. So I love when you're able to put on for your city, and that's what the Suns are doing right now.
It's so fun to be in these cities where teams haven't been in the finals in so long, because the excitement's off the head. I mean, you live here in the offseason.
Steve Nash and Grant Hill were on the team when they went to the conference finals in 2010. It's been a while.
Been a while.
I want to age them.
We'll get into that 2010 experience. It's a little later in the show. Robert Ori is going to join us. But, you know, it's good. I like reliving the Matt Barnes glory days. All right. We are here in Phoenix. We're coming to you from the Suns Arena, where the home team took game one. Now, reminder, game two tomorrow night. Still here in Phoenix. A cactus or two for you gentlemen. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I am alongside NBA champ Matt Barnes and the Hall of Famer Michael Wilbon. And look who we have.
At some point.
I just want you guys to know that when Wilbon and I go to dinner, I will introduce him that way to waiters, because he's in the Hall of Fame.
Sir.
Just saying. Look who else is joining us. Our NBA reporter. He is with the Suns on this series, Dave McMenamin. Thank you so much, friend. Want to start off with last night's performance. Chris Paul scored or assisted on 54 of the team's 118 points. You have an article up right now talking about CP3. What was working so well for him, Dave, in game one?
Well, Rachel, it was a masterful performance, because he was able to dictate what the Suns were going to do against the Bucks defense that they were seeing. So in the first quarter, Chris Paul setting the table, 12 points for Devin Booker, not calling his own number. In the second half, he just starts going ham when you started to see Bucks defenders switching, and he had Brook Lopez on an island, hits a four-point play to get the building going insane and get the momentum on their side. Later on in the third quarter, it's Bobby Portis on him. He backs up his dribble all the way out to midcourt, practically, hits him with a crossover, hits him with a hesitation move, finishes at the rim with the finger roll. And Mike Budenholzer said after the game that Chris Paul is so good, he puts us in a no-win situation, because if we play him straight up, he's going to pick us apart in the pick and roll, finding shooters. But if we switch out to try to crowd him, obviously, even though he's 36 years old, still has the ability to blow by guys. So it really, his fingerprints were all over that win for the Suns, and a great sign for them moving forward in this series.
Absolutely. Dave, Matt Barnes here. Aside from a new car every time Devin Booker's pulling into the arena, are we seeing a different Devin Booker here in the finals?
Well, what we saw was a continuation of his dominance in game ones of the playoff series they've had during this run. He puts up 34 points against the Lakers, then switches himself up in game one against Denver, 21 points, but 8 assists, and he goes 8 for 12 from the field. A 40-piece against the Clippers, which was memorable, obviously, and then he got going with 27 points against the Bucks in game one, and it was really about him getting to his spots. Now, it wasn't his most efficient night, but he kept pressure on the Bucks defense constantly. And obviously, if he keeps the Bucks in stress mode, where they're always wondering where he's going to be, or they're always having to shift their defense to account for him, other opportunities are going to open up. So either he could miss a shot, which he did several times, and you have DeAndre Ayton or Jake Crowder cleaning up the offensive glass, or he has a ability to distribute. As you mentioned, he had those 8 assists to start off the Nuggets series. And then defensively, I mean, this is remarkable. According to ESPN stats and information, the Bucks players shot 1 for 11 with Booker as the primary defender. Now, that's been a mark against him in his career so far. If he's going to give them two-way play, watch out.
Wow. Dave, there's one thing that didn't go well for the Suns, obviously, last night. We saw Dario Saric, who's an important member of that bench. By the way, that bench needs a nickname or something.
I know,
right? They're pretty effective. But we saw Dario Saric limp off to the locker room, did not come back to the game. Do we know about his status going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough news. The team announced this morning that Dario Saric will be out indefinitely. He tore the ACL in his right knee. And he had only been playing about 10 minutes per game throughout this playoff run, but he's someone who has Monty Williams' trust. They have ties going back to Philadelphia together. And Monty actually commented in the Western Conference Finals that he felt like Saric was struggling with his confidence early on in the playoffs, but figured something out against the Clippers where it was just like, go out and play, be tougher than your opponent. And he has a bit of a herky-jerky game, but he has some skill with that herky-jerky game, and he can play both forward and center. So the question now is, do you go with Torrey Craig and play with a small ball five moving forward, or is it going to be Frank Kaminsky, who we saw get some minutes last night? You know, the good thing for the Suns and that deep bench that they have is that they have options. And one potential nickname, how about the Solar System?
You're not. You're getting. You're not
over, Dave.
You're not getting. You're not getting traction on this end of that, Dave. I hate to. Not going to lie to you. The faces of these two gentlemen to my left are not. They're not what you'd want. Dave, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you again throughout this series. Still ahead on the Jump, we're going to talk a little bit about Adam Silver. He spoke last night. He addressed the future of the NBA's play-in tournament. Do our guys think it's a good idea to keep it, or should we go back to the old format? We will discuss next. So keep it locked on the Jump. We are back here in Phoenix. We're coming to you live from the Suns Arena. Robert Horry is going to join us in just a moment. But first, it's time for a little make or miss, gentlemen.
Back to Horry. Horry for three. Let's apply. Yes! Yeah!
It's a make or miss league. And in my case, it's a make or switch league.
When it's true, it's just true. Suns out and running, and Giannis comes out of nowhere for this swap. We've been talking about it all day. Matt, Giannis's toughness here, how did that impress you?
I loved it. And I think this was a turning point in his mental approach to the rest of the game. I think once he took this run, chased down block, he realized that, okay, my body is here, my knee is here. In the second half, we saw him attack and be a lot more aggressive.
Know what it reminded us of? In real time, I actually did think about this time, about the LeBron chase down. Mm-hmm. And it's in the finals. We're back to that.
Back
that
in the finals.
Again.
Obviously, the LeBron chase down came into game seven in the closing minutes. But still, this also just reminds you, I mean, not that we can ever forget, but he's so damn athletic.
He wasn't in the picture. He wasn't in the shot.
Like the number of strides it takes him to get from the midcourt to the basket, it's just insane how few steps he has to take. All right, Miss Awareness, last possession of the game. Ayton, one rebound away from a 2020 game. Chris Paul steals the final rebound.
Hey, CP's done this a few times with the Clippers as well. And he knows what is going on. No, I'm kidding.
He's been so supportive of all these players, obviously. But do you think that Ayton will eventually get that 2020 game in these playoffs, Mike?
I think so. Oh, go ahead.
I mean, he's been close a couple of times. He's had a 22 rebound game.
Yeah.
I think he had 17 or 19 in that game as well. It looks like it's sort of inevitable. What I'm finding inevitable about him is, what is he going to be like next season?
Dude.
Well, I think Jeff Van Gundy put it perfectly. He has to do the three R's: rebound, run, and roll. And I think before this season, we didn't really know what he was going to be, a number one pick, find his rhythm, what's going on. But Chris has made his job so simple. I have a track record of getting big men paid. If you do what I tell you, I'm going to get you 100 plus million, and we're going to win a championship this year.
Listen up.
Both of those things. Could Chris Paul say that to any of us? Because those two things sound very nice. I'm just saying. Make advantages. Bobby Portis switching on to CP. All right, wait and watch this as it develops. The point guard making him pay here. Matt, anybody love a mismatch more than Chris Paul?
Hey, he learned how to dance right there. Chris taught Bobby how to dance on the fly. But Chris is, even at 36, he has a ball on a string, and once he gets that angle, he's by you, he puts his body into you, and he's going to score. So, again, great night for Chris. Tough matchup for Bobby and the rest of the Bucks wings, or big, excuse me.
I feel bad for Bobby Portis there. Bobby Portis has played really good defense.
Bobby Portis. This is what Chris Paul does to people.
Yeah, this is on that defense. They should not be employing anything that switches to the point where Chris Paul's going to hunt that switch. You know he's going to find it, and then kill it if the bigs are on. You have to have guards on Chris Paul, or this is going to be the result.
Well, also, I will say, as someone who covered the first round Suns-Lakers series, and Chris couldn't, I mean, he just didn't have his handle, right? Remember? It seemed like
it was
nerve
Remember that, that
from the shoulder, a little nerve issue, right?
Fingers,
so to see him have that ball so tight and be Chris Paul point guard, it's nice to see. Let us now welcome in a man who is no stranger to an NBA Finals. The gentleman here earlier, Robert, were talking about, hey, you never know when you're going to get to a Finals. It took Chris Paul 16 years to get here. Guess what? Robert Horry was here and won it 7 times. Welcome, of course, to the show, Robert. So, so happy to have you today.
Thanks for having me. I wish I could be in Phoenix with you guys, but I'm in the studio by myself enjoying this moment. But I think I know why I'm not in Phoenix.
Well, we'll get to your history against the Phoenix Suns shortly. Don't worry, that will be addressed on today's show. But I do want to get to Adam Silver and the commissioner's comments last night, guys. He gave his sort of annual game one of the finals address. And among the questions he got was about the play-in tournament, whether it was here to stay after working first in the bubble, kind of in an emergency triage situation, and then this year in that COVID-shortened season. Take a listen to what Adam said.
It's my expectation that we'll continue it for next season. We both, of course, need agreement from our teams and the Players Association. And I know, you know, Michelle Roberts doesn't have an easy job. She has 450 players. Some maybe have louder voices than others at the table. But again, I think ultimately, although there were critics, not just LeBron, but, you know, others who weren't in favor of it, and maybe some teams who weren't thrilled with it, I think overall it was very positive for the league and the players. I mean, certainly there have been some suggestions about some tweaks we should consider. It's my expectation that it'll continue for next season.
So, Robert, you were right in the thick of this because the other broadcast team you work with locally in L.A., the Lakers, that Lakers squad was in the play-in tournament. So you got to see it up close. Do you think it was a success this past year? Are you happy that it seems like it's going to stay?
I'm happy for the fans, but personally, I'm not a fan of it because I hate when a team works so hard to get in that eighth spot. The next thing you know, you have to play one game, you have a bad game, you lose that game. Then you got to play another game, and you have another bad game, you lose that game. So I'm thinking like Steph Curry. We missed a golden opportunity to see a guy who should have been MVP play in the playoffs, do some things that's extraordinary. But because they didn't win, because they fought so hard to get to that eighth seed, they're not in the playoffs. So we missed that. And there's no disrespect to Ja Morant because he's an up-and-rising star. He's trying to get his foot in the door so people can know who he is. But Steph has both feet in the door. He's in the building. We know who he is. And I wanted to see that because this guy could have did something. Who knows? He could have got to the second round and upset Utah. So that's why I'm not a fan of the play-in.
Robert and I had this very discussion on camera before the play-in. And really what I learned from him, that's a persuasive case you can't argue that he just made. But what I learned is there are two separate cases here that are not going to intersect. Like, you know, going into this, Robert had convinced me, because everything he said I agree with. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it. Right. And I was like, oh, my God, this is so exciting, the drama and the pressure. So if I was playing, I would not want any part of this. But if somebody just watching it and observing it, I can't wait to get in front of the TV with the popcorn.
Right.
Or if I'm near in person, which I hopefully going forward with no pandemic, we can see. It's so exciting to watch. So I just think there's a difference of opinion, which is never, again, not going to overlap or intersect.
Completely understand where Rob is coming from as a player fighting. I've been on a team that's an 8th or 7th seed, and I would have been mad if we got knocked out in a play-in game for the situation. But from a fan's perspective, because I'm a fan now, I loved it. It kept the enthusiasm. It kick-started the playoffs, and viewership was off the charts.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what it's about. But I will say this. We need to start talking to players more and listening to players more because we're also hearing that they could do a mid-season tournament, which I don't think is a good idea at all.
Yeah.
You have to get these guys some rest. You have to listen to them because the game is so much different now than it was when I played, definitely when Rob played. So the wear and tear on these guys' bodies is different. We saw a lot of injuries. And, you know, this kind of stuff can add to it. So, again, I love it from a fan standpoint. I know the fans love it from a player standpoint. I want to know what they think, and you've heard what they think, and they don't really like it.
But you I add something, though?
Please, Robert.
The interesting thing is we lucked up this year. We had Steph Curry, Ja Morant. We had four teams without injuries, probably been top four. You know, think about that. We lucked up. Will we be like this next season where the top
Great point,
guys
Robert.
are hurt, and they're on a sorry, I won't say sorry team, but they failed in the, they fell to a lower seed. So will we have that next season? That's my problem with the play-in tournament.
That is how a man with seven rings talks.
Yes.
He can just say, oh, yeah, that team's sorry. Sorry. I'm just going to be straight with all of you. I will say also as a fan, the idea that it created three different levels of competition and that kind of dead part toward the end of the regular season that sometimes feels, yep. you know, just a slog to get through.
No tanking. People were trying to get, they thought they could get in.
Okay, we had a little tiny bit of tanking.
Okay, but less than usual.
Houston, Oklahoma City. But I will say this, that you had the competition at the top for those top seeds, right? Like you always have. You had that competition at the sixth spot, right? Don't get in the play-in tournament. And then even the 9 or 10 teams, right? I love seeing the Wizards be involved in this, and they were a team that wouldn't have been in the playoff bracket if they hadn't been. So it was nice to see all of that. We will find out. He was also asked, Adam Silver, about the idea of further expansion in the NBA. Seattle. Here's what he had to say about that.
In terms of expansion, I know that was reported that you know, when revenues were down, we were looking more seriously at expansion. I mean, it didn't work exactly like that, largely because expansion's a multi-year process. So it wasn't as if the pandemic came, we're 40% down, we can quickly collect some expansion revenue. Yes, it's true that we actually had some time while we were initially shut down and we were meeting more often with our team to think a little bit more about it. But it seemed the consensus was certainly during a pandemic that wasn't the right time to expand, but that you should continue to consider it.
Mr. Wilbon, you have seen a lot of teams move around in the NBA. You've seen expansion. What are your thoughts about the league expanding soon?
Put a team in Seattle. I don't care what else you do. Getting out of Seattle was a bad move. It was a bad move optics. It was a bad move for business. Put a team in Seattle. It's one of the great cities in North America, if not the world. Put a team there. I understand that Vegas would help balance that. Fine, do that too. Moving out of Seattle was a bad, bad idea. And as soon as the NBA can reverse that, the better everybody will be.
Yeah, Vegas to Seattle are my two picks. And if you look at it, too, some people say, are you going to water down the competition? To me, you just lose a third star of the team. So now you're going back to trios instead of, or excuse me, you're going duos. Back to two stars, duos instead of trios. So I think it's a great opportunity. It brings more jobs to people, players, yeah. staff, the city, economy. So obviously the NBA is in a great spot, but who wouldn't want to see two more teams, especially if they're going to be in Seattle and Las Vegas?
Well, look, there's two ways you could get a team back in Seattle. You could expand or, of course, the team left Seattle because of just a team moving. There's been speculation with Alex Rodriguez being one of the new partners owning the Minnesota Timberwolves. Would he want to move that team to Seattle? Obviously, there's plenty of Wolves fans in Minnesota who would not like to see that happen. We will just have to watch all of that play out. Mr. Wilbon, now, Robert, I know that you can't see this necessarily from where you are, but Mr. Wilbon, who is about to leave us, came casual today, and I just wanted to know your thoughts before we say goodbye to him.
I see the shorts. I see the legs. I see that. I see you, Will.
Robert knows how hot it is here.
I was just there 3 weeks ago, and it was 120, so I understand why you got the shorts on.
Exactly.
That's
Hall of Fame status. You can only do that once you're in the hall.
You can get to do whatever you please. Mr. Wilbon, thank you. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me putting up with it. Robert, good seeing you. Even though it's distant, I thought you were going to be here. And, you know, it's always good to be with Matt Barnes. Always.
There you go. We will see you on PTI later today. Everyone else, stick around with us. We are going to have Suns guard Cam Johnson joining the show. He will talk to us about his NBA Finals debut. Stick it. Welcome back to The Jump. We are in the Valley of the Sun following Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Suns winning over the Bucks. And we are so pleased now to be joined by Cam Johnson on The Jump. Cam, you made your NBA Finals debut last night. Congratulations on the win. How would you assess your performance and just the way you have found your role with this team through these playoffs?
Solid. Any time we end up in a dub, I'll consider it solid. But just doing what I got to do on the court, help my team. We got guys that make a lot of plays. Guys like Book, CP, DA had an incredible game. Mikhail is making plays. So I'm just going out there and doing my job, doing my part.
Well, you got good teammates to be doing it around. Chris Paul now, the odds-on favorite to win Finals MVP. Sure looked like that last night. What did you make of his performance being out on the court with him and watching him work?
That's just what he does. He doing what he does, getting to his spots, taking advantage of mismatches, and just hitting shots, hitting big-time shots, hitting tough shots, and that stuff. That's hard to guard, and it's demoralizing when you play against it, when it keeps hitting the mid-range fadeaway or the step-back three, and props to him for that big-time performance.
Cam, what's up, man? Matt Barnes here. Giannis had his way with you guys during the regular season, averaging nearly 40 points a game. With his status coming to the finals unknown, what was your guys' game plan preparing for the two-time MVP?
Just make it tough on him. Don't let him get to the rim as easy. Show a lot of resistance, show him a lot of bodies, and just be physical with him.
Yeah, you guys did a good job of that.
Cam, John, Robert over here. The playoffs are all about elevation. When you come to the finals, you got to take it to a different level. So how has Book taken his game to another level? We saw what he did in the first couple of rounds, but the finals is a different type of beast. So explain how he's taken it to the next level, like a Kobe Bryant.
One thing that can't overlooked is his defense. Yesterday, he did a great job on defense, a great job guarding Drew, and he played hard on both ends of the court, and he gave his all every possession, and he's a guy that can really make shots, him and CP, and that's just what he does. But I think the defensive end of the floor is where he really just elevated.
Cam, what has Coach Williams' message been to you guys? I mean, you guys are a very young team. Obviously, having CP helps a lot. But what has the coach's message been to you guys throughout the, not only through, in the finals, but throughout these playoffs?
Executing game plans has been big for us. Anytime we've coaches have made great game plans for us, honestly. And anytime we've executed those, the outcome's been pretty good. That and just effort, physicality. That's what we brought to the court all season. And that's just something that we've prided ourselves on and we brought into this postseason.
Cam, Monty has all those Monty-isms that we keep talking about. My favorite one is when he says, I'm not calling you out, I'm calling you up. I think that's just sort of a genius way to talk to players. What is your favorite Monty-ism?
My favorite is it's a get to, not a got to. Anytime we step on the court, it's just an opportunity that's not guaranteed to anybody, and we're honestly all blessed to be in this position. So that was my favorite right there.
All right, well, look, this is one of those how it started, how it's going questions. Before we let you go, we do have to replay some sound from the draft 2 years ago. Your college teammate, Bulls guard, Kobe White, he reacted to you being drafted 11th, even though you were projected to be picked more around 30. Take a listen here for everyone who doesn't remember it.
Cameron Johnson just went 11th. How do you react to that news?
He went what?
11th.
Cam Johnson went 11th.
Yep. Right on the screen right there.
Wow. Wow. Wow, bro. That's crazy. That's so love, bro. Because y'all know Cam, you don't know how hard Cam work.
You have, of course, Cam, gone on to prove the Suns absolutely right for picking you that high. Is there a little vindication here from your perch from the NBA Finals for those out there who saw you as a late first rounder or even second round pick?
I'm not too worried about that. It's been a common theme. I've heard the he shouldn't have gone here, he shouldn't have gone there, shouldn't have gone to Pitt, shouldn't have gone to North Carolina, should have been drafted number 11. I heard it all, so I wouldn't say that's the word. It gives me a little bit of chip on my shoulder, but for the most part, I'm just out here, you know, trying to do my job, do my part, help our team win a championship.
Good job,
well,
Cam.
I've been there, Cam,
at the 11th pick, so I've had a lot of doubts. Yep, I got booed at the 11th pick. Look, 7 championships later, baby. Keep working hard.
7 of them. 7 of them. Appreciate you guys.
There you go. Sorry. Cam, that's a lot to live up to. I hope you can get your 7 also as a 11th pick.
That is.
And I will say, even though you're being very gracious here, I will do the how it's going part of the meme and tell people it's going just fine for Cam. Cam, thank you so much for joining us. Yeah. We'll see you out on the court tomorrow night.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome. All right, everyone else, stick with us. Up next, following that Game 1 takeover, CP3 positioned himself as the early Finals MVP frontrunner. We're going to discuss it with Matt and Robert next. Stick around. Chris Paul just lights out, right, in game one, guys. 32 points. He also had 9 assists. And let's take a look. He entered the series with odds to win Finals MVP plus 160. He's now listed at minus 140 to win the award. This is according to Caesars Sportsbook by William Hill. The next closest players, Devin Booker at plus 450, and then Giannis also at that same mark. Matt, are you buying CP3 as Finals MVP?
Absolutely. I think everything is aligning perfectly, Rachel. I mean, it took him 16 years to get here. Should have been here a few times before. He's finally here. He's on the biggest stage. He's as healthy as he can be. He's leading a young team that didn't even make the playoffs last year, playing great basketball. He may not have to score 30 every game, but he's always going to have his imprint on the game from an offensive standpoint and a defensive standpoint.
What do you think, Robert?
You know, Rachel, you use the term point guard. This guy is controlling the game. He's putting everybody in positions to be great. Not good, but great. When you have a teammate that can do that for you and set the table for himself, take advantage of his opportunities. Lopez, what are you trying to do? You can't guard me. Going to the hole, scoring. He is going to be the MVP. If he continues to stay healthy and do this type of stuff for the Phoenix Suns, getting his first chip and his first Finals MVP.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the Bucks will have something to say about that. They would like the Finals MVP to come from their team, just saying. So we'll see how that goes for the rest of the series. I do want to get back into the game action a little bit before we go, because early in the third quarter, Chris Paul, he pulled up over Brook Lopez. Now, Brook landed in CP's landing zone. Sorry, Brook was stepping in CP's landing zone. CP3 crashed to the ground. Lopez was assessed a, quote, reckless closeout for that flagrant one. So, Robert, I'll start with you. Do you agree that this should have been a flagrant?
Well, this is one of those things could go back and forth, because if there's been a guy wearing a size 10, it wouldn't have happened. Brook Lopez is 7'1", big feet. They get in the way sometimes. I don't think it's a flagrant, but this is this day and age of the NBA when a guy goes up on it. You know, I experienced that in game with Kobe Bryant and with Jalen Rose sticking his foot purposely under Kobe's foot to get him hurt. But I don't think this was malicious, and I think it shouldn't have been a flagrant.
I think this, as Rob said, this is just where the game is at now. I know that Brook had no malicious intent when he did it, but it's just a part of the game, because when you're up in the air, you are the most vulnerable player on the floor, and they want to protect their players. Luckily, when I saw this, I saw it wasn't a full roll, and I knew he'd be okay. I was, you know, a part of the Warriors team, actually healing from an ankle injury when Zaza had the Kawhi situation. Kawhi was cooking us, and, you know, that ankle went out, and he was done for the rest of the series. You know, our team went on and won a championship, but you always want to protect guys in the air. So, again, I don't think some guys do it purposely. This Brook Lopez, but definitely wasn't intentional.
That video is why the rule was adapted and changes, and why people refer to it as the Zaza Pachulia rule.
Or
Thank
Bruce
you so
Bowen.
Much for joining us today. We will see you back tomorrow for game 2.